Think punk rock and you almost certainly think of the filth and the fury. You think of the Sex Pistols, the spitting, and a scene so short-lived that it imploded almost the minute it got going. What you probably don't think of straight away is Notting Hill, home now to the chattering Tory classes, the gentle whitewash movies of Richard Curtis. But actually, Notting Hill was crucial to the punk story. I'm Tim Jones, music editor of Guardian.co.uk. I'm here to talk and walk you through the punk landmarks of Notting Hill, the places that are probably a bit off the beaten track, and meet some of the people who are there to witness it firsthand. One of these is the writer John Savage, author of the definitive punk history, England's Dreaming. I wanted to know what was so special about the area.
That area was very much Clash area. Pistols area was very much Soho and King's Road. So it was a big kind of punk area. One of the features of the time was that kids could live near the centre of London fairly cheaply because they squatted. In the 70s, you'd had slum clearance without the money to actually repair the slum clearance. So you had a lot of empty houses. The new builds, the rebuilds, didn't really start until the 80s. So you had a good 5 to 10 years when there was a lot of derelict property in London. And also Notting Hill Gate has got a long history of immigration. It's where a lot of West Indians came after the war. The carnival started there. So it's very much a melting pot, a market, a place where people meet.
And could you just give us a snapshot of just what the punk community was like?
Well, of course, everybody was horrible to each other during punk rock. That's all I remember. The big party. Christmas 1976, Caroline Coon's house. So they come along and there's the Pistols, some of the Clash, Rodent, myself, Steve Walsh, John Ingham, and then the Heartbreakers come. And they've taken heroin. And suddenly the whole mood changes and it all gets very, very ugly. And I remember it being, you know, being in a corner with Steve Walsh trying to have an arty conversation, all this mayhem going on around us. I do remember the moment when Steve Jones or one of his friends nicked this Frenchman's fur coat and there was a knife thrown through the room which ended up in the door. You know, it was that kind of event. And there was puking and there was shagging in the toilets and somebody shat in the towels and doors were kicked off their hinges and it was one of those parties.
Right, well, Jeff Travis from Rough Trade is expecting us, so we'd better move on and head to Goulburn Road.
Hi, Tim, how are you doing? Come in.
Well, Rough Trade, the label, started off as Rough Trade, the store. Why did you choose Notting Hill as a place to start, open your first record store?
The area was kind of, you know, it was rich in cultural history and a lot of music and a lot of musicians living in the area, so it kind of felt right. I mean, the shop kind of got going and became kind of semi-famous as a destination, just to the point that it got really crowded on the weekends. We had a sound system in the shop, so the music would pump out really loud, so you could hardly hear what people were trying to buy anyway.
So what punk landmarks do you think are still around? You know, if you came here off the beaten track, what would you go and see in the area?
Jimi Hendrix died in Arundel Gardens. I mean, the 101ers used to play at the Elgin, and pub is still there. The Raincoats used to play at the Chippenham. The Hermit's Cafe, that was a place where people would meet and talk. I remember sitting in there with Mick having a conversation and Mick saying, well, what do people really think of me? And I would say, well, Mick, they think you're a young Keith Richards. And he would be really upset, although found out subsequently that he, you know, in his flat, all he had was pictures of Keith Richards. So that was the paradox of keeping up the punk, you know, pretending to be what you're not.
Well, we're heading off next to meet Don Letts now. How does he fit in with the whole story of punk in Notting Hill?
He was a real music aficionado, Don, even before punk. And I think he was one of the first to recognise the importance of what was going on. It's credit to him for that.
In the areas north and northwest from Rough Trade, there's kind of a few kind of on the fringes interesting punk landmarks. The areas around kind of Elgin Avenue and Chippenham Road is where, you know, a lot of the squats were. And also north of Rough Trade, one of the most kind of famous punk icons really still lives. It's Don Letts. I'm going to go and meet him now. So Don, a lot of people would think that punk and reggae don't have that much in common. What do you think the links are between the two genres?
Young white working class kids have always been attracted to black music for that spirit of rebellion. I think the difference between the whole punky reggae connection that happened in the late 70s is that effect was a lot more direct, because no longer were these kids being fascinated by music that was coming from thousands of miles away. They were affected by music that they could hear next door, because, you know, we grew up side by side. It was more kind of River Thames than Mississippi Delta.
I mean, on the surface level, the two genres, punk and reggae, they're quite different.
Yes, sonically, I guess they're diametrically opposed. But what connects them is attitude. I mean, after all, the invention of reggae music itself is a kind of Jamaican punk rock. I mean, the punks particularly liked the bass lines that came from Jamaica, the fact that the songs had a kind of musical reportage quality, and they didn't mind the weed either.
You've obviously worked closely with The Clash. Do you have a memory from Notting Hill of hanging out with them?
I do remember being at the 76 riots with them and getting separated fairly quickly. Interestingly, that 76 riot was actually to provide the cover for one of the Clash's albums, Black Market Clash, which is a picture of a Dread facing off against, like, thousands of police. And that young Dread is actually yours truly, Don Letts. Although the truth of the matter is that the picture shows me fronting these cops, but what it doesn't show is the thousands of brothers behind me with the bricks and the bottles preparing to kick off. And actually, I was getting out of the way.
Bob Marley, the punky reggae tune. Let me know how that came about.
When Bob was hanging out in London in the late 70s, I used to sell him weed. I do not do that anymore. I was a young man. And one day I went around to his house wearing my bondage trousers, because the whole punk rock thing was going off in those days. And Bob looked at my trousers and he's like, "Don Letts, we are dealing with you. You look like one of them nasty blood clot punk rockers." In English, he said, "Don, what are you doing? You look like one of those nasty punk rockers." He'd obviously been reading the tabloid press and totally got the wrong end of the stick. And I actually had to defend my friends. I was like, "Bob, no, you're wrong. These are my friends. You know, there's something going on here. They're not crazy ballheads. You know, we're like-minded rebels." Punky, punky, punk. And he was like, "Yeah, get the hell out of here," basically. And I left. And 3 months later, after he was somewhat more informed, I guess, and had met journalists like Vivian Goldman, for instance, he was actually moved to write the song Punky Reggae Party. So I always thought I got the last laugh there.
After the death of Clash singer Joe Strummer in 2002, the charity Strummerville was set up, and that's actually based, I hope, under the Westway. So we're going to go and speak to them now, find out how the punk spirit really lives on with the work they do. Well, the area we're in is kind of like an industrial park, but there's lots of barbed wire up. There's the big concrete structure with all the cars driving past above. There's tower blocks everywhere and a few cranes. It's definitely got a kind of outsider feel. And you can see why the punks would like to hang out underneath the Westway, definitely. So I'm trying to find Strummerville, but it's not very well signposted. It doesn't look like I'm going to find it at the moment. No one there. 22. Do you know where number 22 is? Or do you know what this is? So we've been directed now to what looks like two caravans on top of each other with a radio mast that says Radio Rebel. So maybe the charity's there. Lots of vintage cars.
Hi guys.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. I didn't think we'd find it. So Trish, explain how the punk ethos inspires Strummerville.
Well, we really believe in the do-it-yourself ethic, basically, and it's really exciting times, I suppose, in music at the moment, because people really can do it themselves and the barriers have come down, and I think that was what punk was really about, bringing down those barriers, basically. And that's really what we try and do here, is we try and empower people through music to be heard, make a difference, express themselves, get their music out there, change the world.
Strummerville's chosen to be under the Westway, which was where the Clash used to hang out. You know, what made you choose Notting Hill as an area to set up the charity?
Well, we're kind of down here in what somebody recently called this rock and roll Narnia. So we're in a porter cabin under the Westway next to a traveller's site. You know, we're out of the system, I guess, and that's important. and it's still so vibrant in the area. There's still a lot of support for us around here with friends of Joe's.
So you're going to introduce us to one of the acts that Strummerville helps out. Who's that going to be?
This is going to be Alex, who's the lead singer in a new band called The Wild Wolves.
Hi, Alex.
What's up? Hey.
How you doing?
I'm
doing.
So I guess we should start. I should ask you, how has Strummerville helped you out as a band?
Strummerville have helped massively in like all sorts of ways. It seems like it's a big sort of family now. Like we did a tour recently, and it was quite a riotous time. But everybody sort of got together and started sort of playing music together. And by the end of it, you know, like all the bands sort of seem to kind of like be now helping each other out. And I guess indirectly, we're all kind of indebted to sort of Strummerville for kind of getting us all together in the first place.
As a musician, how did The Clash inspire you?
Well, you know, it was all about just being like your average sort of on the level kind of person that everyone could relate to. But, you know, it was about performance as well and like making an effort and kind of looking cool and like really putting on a show and like kind of, you know, making a difference and having something to say.
So despite the fact we've just seen an OAP with a Pink Mohican riding down the street in a motorised wheelchair, I'm not sure you can really say that the punk rock lives on in Notting Hill. There are glimmers, there are pockets of kind of outlaw rebel spirit, but in general this is a very well-to-do area now. But, you know, the legacy lives on in music, in kind of bands just wanted to pick up that mantle and do it themselves. That's what the area gave to the world. And an area's not supposed to keep these things for itself. It's supposed to give birth to them and let them go off and take over the rest of the world.